The following program, Normal Show Live, is intended for responsible adults only. We advocate for the repeal of marijuana prohibition for adults. We discuss the science, culture, and controversy about America's marijuana laws. We do not advocate or encourage any illegal activity and advise all listeners to learn their state and federal marijuana laws by visiting normal.org, N-O-R-M-L.org. Opinions and claims made by guests and advertisers of Normal Show Live are their own and do not necessarily reflect the philosophy and policies of Normal. Listener discretion is advised.
You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it,
and it goes down smooth. Hey!
Spanning the continent to bring you the truth about cannabis and marijuana law reform.
I smoke pot and I like it a lot.
From the promise of legalization.
And I think we need to rethink and decriminalize our marijuana laws.
To the agony of prohibition.
One major responsibility is to encourage people to use less drugs.
The National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws presents... Normal Show Live, Marijuana Nation. Now, here's your host, Normal's Outreach Coordinator, Radical Russ Belville.
Good afternoon and welcome, Tokers and Tokettes. It is Wednesday, December 1st, 2010, and it's got to be 420 somewhere in the world. Thanks for joining us for the next 120 minutes of news, talk, interviews, information, music, comedy, call-ins, and more by, for, and about the cannabis community. We're coming to you live and direct from Potland, Oregon, and beautiful Rolla-J Studios. Joining me here in the studio is the maestro, Ganja John. What?
Whoa.
Well, that's
studio
harsh,
audience.
Man. Wow, what's that for?
I don't know.
Did they see your accident before the show? Was that what it was?
I dropped my eye.
John texted me the other day and he said he was playing a game of Yahtzee what family and friends?
Yep.
What?
Yeah, and family, and I dropped my eye.
His eye. His eye falls out in the Yahtzee club. That gives a whole new meaning
to rolling
snake eyes.
And then I rolled it.
Hey, snake eyes.
To everyone's surprise.
Oh, my goodness. And also joining us from our virtual studio in Grass, Astoria, Oregon, is the lovely Cannabis Carrie.
Hello, guys.
Yes. How are you, Carrie?
I'm doing great. Christmas came a little early. Today's December 1st, and I got a new present from Santa, new headphones.
Oh, new headphones. Good for you. Glad to hear
it.
Yeah,
they're great, but they're super noise canceling. So if like a SWAT team comes and busts through the door, I'm not going to hear them until they knock me out of my chair.
Well, we'll try to keep the SWAT away from you, okay? also, today is December 1st. That makes it World AIDS Day today. We're going to be talking a little bit about this in our 30 After segment with Dr. Mitch Early Wine. We always talk about cannabis science. We take your live calls in the chat and via the live call-ins, and we'll talk a little bit about HIV/AIDS and the use of medical marijuana for those suffering from HIV/AIDS. One in five people living in America that have HIV are unaware that they have HIV. An estimated 56,300 Americans every year become infected, and we have more than 576,000 people through 2007, at least, who have died from HIV/AIDS since the epidemic began. So we'll talk a little bit about that and try to build some awareness for HIV/AIDS on this World AIDS Day. Also coming up on today's show at 45 past, we're going to go into the radical rant mode. We're going to talk a little bit about Arizona's new medical marijuana law and how the employers down there are freaking out over the notion of medical marijuana patients in the workplace. Oh, scary, scary. Also, at 20 past the hour, we get Grateful Dread Public Radio from New Jersey, bringing us our Irie Wednesday Daily Toker Tunes, and we got some great music today from Mr. Perfect. But before we get to all of that, we go over our hemp headlines with Cannabis Carrie. What's in the news today?
Well, today we're going to talk about proposed changes in New Mexico's medical marijuana program. Also, Mendocino Sheriff stands up for some growers. And a story that I can't believe I didn't report on yesterday or Monday, but outrage from a Supreme Court ruling on Friday. We're going to cover that.
All right. I've also got a little stupid stoner story at the end of the headlines today for our Canadian listeners, eh? So enjoy this one. And in hour two, we'll be taking your live calls at 971-533-7111. That number is open for our podcast listeners as well. 24 hours a day, you can call, leave a message, and it might get played on our live show. But right back after this, it's Normal Show Live.
You're listening to Normal Show Live, the voice of the marijuana nation. Been busted? Need a lawyer? Call the Normal Legal Committee for an attorney near you. Find one at norml.org. Remember, attorneys are cheaper than a lifelong criminal drug record.
It's that freedom. Freedom.
Georgia. Hi, this is Willie Nelson, and I need your help. Our marijuana laws are terribly unfair, and they make criminals out of law-abiding citizens. Nearly 2,000 Americans are arrested every day on marijuana charges. And we are unfairly destroying the lives and careers of hundreds of thousands of people simply because they smoke marijuana. These are not criminals. They are average citizens like you, good neighbors who work hard, raise families, pay taxes, and contribute to their communities. And it's time we stopped arresting responsible marijuana smokers. We need your help to end marijuana prohibition once and for all. It's the fair thing to do.
For more information, contact NORMAL, the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws. Call toll-free 888-67-NORML or visit their website at norml.org.
Medical marijuana, industrial hemp, consumer cannabis. It's time for this week's Normal News with Cannabis Carrie.
The proposed changes to New Mexico's medical marijuana program will not allow enough access to the state's medical marijuana patients, according to activists. The proposed changes to the state's program include new fees imposed on producers, and it isn't adequate and would destroy the operations of small-scale licensed growers. The agency now proposes an annual fee based on how long a grower has operated, ranging from $5,000 for producers licensed for less than a year and up to $30,000 for those licensed for more than 3 years. Producers are also upset that the state did not propose raising the current limit on the amount of medical marijuana they can have. Currently, only 95 mature plants and seedlings are allowed, and according to growers, that will not provide enough inventory of medical marijuana to meet the needs of current patients. Growers contend the limit is not enough to handle the more than 2,800 active patients the state has licensed. Currently, New Mexico has 17 growers, and 6 of them were licensed just last month. Producers suggested increasing the limit to 200 plants or more. The State Department of Health announced proposed changes to the program's regulations in late summer and revised them after growers and patients criticized the change during a September hearing. Initially, the agency proposed creating a new annual fee equal to 7% of a producer's yearly gross receipts, but the department scuttled that plan after objections that the fee, in essence, doubled the gross receipts tax growers already pay. A hearing on the latest plan is set for Thursday in Santa Fe.
I get it. $5,000 if you want to become a medical marijuana producer, $30,000 if you're going to be licensed for more than 3 years. Let's take a look at some of these numbers here. 17 growers in the entire state of New Mexico to handle 2,800 patients. That's 165 patients per grower. Now, if each grower is limited to 95 plants, that works out to about 4 plants for every 7 patients. And that's assuming every 95 plant crop makes it to harvest without mites or molds or, you know, crop failures or any of the other problems that can happen. So there's really just no way you can maintain adequate supplies of medicine for patients with those kind of figures. 4 plants for 7 patients is just not going to do it. Now, I understand why they set the 95 plant minimum there, or maximum, excuse me, and it's to avoid federal scrutiny. At the federal level, once you hit 100 plants, you hit a mandatory minimum that then makes it worth their while to go ahead and go to trial and bust you and, you know, put you to jail for, you know, years or decades. So the only other possible solution, if they can't have more plants, is to have more than just 17 licensed growers. That's going to be a little bit difficult to do when the startup costs alone are so much, you know, just to buy your, get the rent on a place or to get a place and the venting and the lights and all the nutrients and everything that you need to be a professional grower of 95 plants. And then on top of that, you got to shell out a $5,000 fee. Come on, New Mexico. You can do better than that.
The Mendocino sheriff was able to reduce budget cuts to the department thanks to money seized from illegal marijuana farms. 14 jobs were slated to be cut in Mendocino, California, to the sheriff's department, but on Tuesday that number was reduced to 7. Following a contentious day-long debate yesterday, Mendocino, California county supervisors voted to reduce the number of proposed job cuts in the sheriff's office budget, and in return, Sheriff Tom Allman said he would spend an additional $257,000 of asset forfeiture funds, money collected primarily from marijuana busts, to offset his department's $600,000 overtime budget. The sheriff's office had already committed $200,000 in asset forfeiture funds to the overtime budget. He hopes that legal marijuana gardens could help ward off future cuts to public safety, a move that is aimed to reduce an anticipated $1.3 million deficit in his budget. In a signal of acceptance that legal marijuana in some form is here to stay in California, Sheriff Sergeant Randy Johnson told his supervisors that marijuana growers want to be legitimate and they want to help. Johnson oversees the new county program that issues permits allowing medical marijuana cooperatives to grow up to 99 plants. The program may generate more than $600,000 next year with the $1,050 application fee and the inspection service that costs $500 each. So far, there have been 18 medical marijuana cooperatives that have paid for those services, and the county expects that number to skyrocket. Supervisor Kendall Smith, though, called the move an acceptance of, quote, funny money, and County Auditor Meredith Ford warned that the permit fees of any kind are limited to covering the county's cost of providing the service.
Oh, my goodness. Well, this asset forfeiture, for those of you who don't know what we're talking about, is that legal doctrine that says that the cops can seize your property if they have reason to believe that property was involved in or gotten through criminal gains, through drug dealing, through selling marijuana. And the crazy thing is that the property is guilty until proven innocent. You have to prove that the property wasn't gotten through ill-conceived means. Also, this asset forfeiture, it doesn't matter whether or not you were charged with any crime. Doesn't matter if you were charged with possession of marijuana or intent to sell or intent to deliver, anything like that. The property can still be charged with a crime absent you being charged with a crime, and then you have to go through all the trouble of trying to prove that it wasn't guilty. You end up spending more money on the court costs and the attorney's fees trying to get your property back than the property is worth in the first place. This is the dirty little secret of law enforcement in America, is that we are balancing the budgets of our law enforcers on the backs of marijuana consumers primarily through the use of civil asset forfeiture funds. These are the little secrets we need to start uncovering to take a look at what would really happen if we were to legalize marijuana. If we were to legalize marijuana and those asset forfeiture funds weren't available for our police, would they have enough to be able to take care of all the rest of the crime that's happening in our countries? We seriously got to take a look at these numbers.
And the state Supreme Court of Connecticut ruled on Friday that a 30-year-old man should be forced to take psychotropic medication in order to be fit to stand trial of possession of more than 8 pounds of marijuana. Christopher Seekins of Torrington, Connecticut, had been ruled incompetent to stand trial due to his bipolar disorder. The High Court ruled in a stunning 7-0 vote that his possession charge is a serious enough crime to warrant forcing medication on the defendant. Before now, Seekins had refused medication, but now can be involuntarily medicated due to a state law that says a defendant can be forced medication if the crime is serious enough and that if there is an overriding law enforcement interest in determining whether the defendant is innocent or guilty. Seekins argued that possessing marijuana isn't a serious crime. The justices upheld a lower court's judge order to medicate Seekins against his will. Justice Richard Palmer, a former prosecutor, wrote in the Supreme Court's ruling that the basis for determining whether a crime is serious is the severity of the sentence it potentially carries. Palmer noted that Seekins faces a mandatory minimum sentence of 7 years in prison if convicted of just 3 of the many charges he faces. Palmer also wrote that the U.S. Supreme Court has ruled that forcing medication on a defendant to make him competent to stand trial is constitutional in certain circumstances. Quote, the defendant is not charged merely with possession of marijuana. He is charged with manufacturing the drug and possessing it with the intent to sell. In light of the quantity of marijuana involved, we cannot conclude as a matter of law that the charges against the defendant are not serious. Justice Palmer also noted a U.S. Supreme Court decision saying society as a whole is a victim when illegal drugs are being distributed in its communities. Seekins, who has been confined to a state psychiatric hospital in Middleton, Connecticut, had argued that marijuana in the criminal case was for recreational purposes, not for sale or distribution. Seekins also made headlines in 2005 when he painted a large picture of marijuana leaves on his Winstead home with the word hemp beneath them after being charged with growing marijuana, saying it was in support of legalizing the drug. He later agreed in a plea bargain to remove or cover up the painting, which caused a ruckus in town because they were visible from busy Main Street. As of this newscast, it is not clear when state officials plan to begin forcing medication on the man.
Wow, I remember that story. We covered that, the guy painting the big hemp leaves, and wow, I didn't realize that was the same guy involved in this Connecticut case. But this is, you know, just reprehensible, this notion that because a guy was gardening and may have been selling to willing buyers a psychotropic, non-toxic, non-addictive, pretty much incapable of fatal overdose herb, we are going to force on him psychotropic, addictive, side effect laden pharmaceuticals to get him to testify, to make him able to stand trial in court. Does this kind of seem backwards to you? I mean, I understand the purpose of this and the idea of getting someone who's psychotic under control to be able to face trial. In the case of a murder or a rape or an arson or something where we're talking about a real crime where real people have been hurt. But when we're talking about marijuana gardening, that's how far we're going to go. We're going to allow our governments to drug us against our will to stand trial for marijuana gardening? Is this the kind of America you want to live in?
Stupid Stoner Stories.
As a public service, Normal reminds you that smoking marijuana will not make one stupid. However, some stupid people do smoke marijuana. Don't be one of those stoners that make the rest of us look bad. Learn your lesson from today's
Stupid Stoner Story.
All right, as we always do for these stories, we go to our old-timey radio correspondent, Freddie Farrakh. Winnipeg Free Press, Canada. Coburn Gourmain, a Canadian man is in a Maine jail after his GPS directed him to a remote U.S. border crossing where agents found a half a kilogram of marijuana in his car. Officials say 54-year-old Daryl Fudge was driving from British Columbia back to his home in Newfoundland on Sunday, and he did not intend to enter the United States, but his GPS gave him the shortest route, which led through northern Maine. The Sun Journal newspaper says Fudge is being held on $5,000 bail. He is expected to appear in court again Wednesday. Okay, so this poor guy, can you just hear him? Ah, Fudge! I forgot to set the avoid international borders checkbox in the GPS options. Damn it, I knew I should have taken that left in Montreal.
Do you think Mr. Fudge goes off fudge a lot?
I don't know, as a thought. And you know, Carrie, she's got the TomTom GPS with the Snoop Dogg voice. Carrie, do you think that Snoop Dogg would have led you through Maine with a pound of weed in your car?
No way, nephew.
Bear left, nephew. Popo on the right. Oh, my God. I feel bad for the guy. I mean, I went and mapped this out in Google to find out what that trip would involve. And this is like 4,435 miles, or four straight days of driving time to go from Newfoundland to British Columbia, right? And by staying in America, he only added 57 miles to the journey, right? So he probably went through, you know, Calgary, Winnipeg, Thunder Bay, Montreal, Quebec City, and then over to St. John in Newfoundland, right? So, you know, he avoids having to go through, you know, South Dakota, North Dakota, Montana. He avoids that border crossing in Sault Ste. Marie, Michigan, all for a pound of BC Bud. And at first I thought, you know, this isn't fair. It's not really a stupid stoner story because it's his GPS that messed up, right? He went the shortest route. Could happen to anyone, right? Except for the fact this is his return trip. He already went that route on the way to BC, right? He's coming back. And so when you get to Montreal, when you were on the way there and the St. Lawrence River was on your right going from Quebec City down to Montreal, and when you were coming back from Montreal and you didn't see that river on your left and you didn't see signs that say Quebec City 300 kilometers, that didn't raise any clues to you that you're on some back-ass backwater road on your way to Maine. Look, the poor guy is facing felony charges. He spent $5,000 in bail. He lost the pound of BC Bud after driving 2 weeks across Canada. The pound in Maine could get him 5 years in prison and another $5,000 in fines. So let this be a lesson to weed smugglers everywhere. Plan your route carefully using a paper map.
I think it's time for a break.
I do feel sorry for the guy. I feel kind of bad.
Yeah, I do too.
That's a lot of driving to get a pound of weed.
You're in Maine, nephew.
We'll see you in a minute.
It's 20 after the hour, and we have to take a short break, if you know what I mean. Please support these sponsors who support Normal Show Live.
Oh, have you ever met that funny reefer man? A reefer man. Have you ever met that funny reefer man, reefer man? If he said he swam to China, he would sell you South Carolina. Then you know you're talking to that reefer man.
In today's busy world, we're inundated by advertising for all types of pharmaceuticals that come with a laundry list of potential side effects. Shouldn't you have better medical choices? Natural alternatives to pills pushed by Big Pharma? At Alternative Medical Choices, you could choose natural, safe, and effective alternative therapies that are right for your budget without nasty side effects. Cannabis, or marijuana, has been a legal medicine in the Pacific Northwest since 1998. Our doctors will help determine your qualifications for a medical marijuana recommendation in Oregon, no matter where you live. Our massage therapists will ease your aches and stress with soothing hemp seed oil or cannabis-infused massage salves. We also offer acupuncture, Reiki, and other alternative health therapies. Call Alternative Medical Choices in Portland, Oregon at 503-288-5579 or visit our website at www.altmedchoices.com. We specialize in out-of-state recommendations. That's www.altmedchoices.com or call 503-288-5579.
It's time for your Daily Toker Tunes, the best in 420-friendly music from all genres that uplifts, entertains, and informs the public. Our PodSafe music is donated by freedom-loving musicians who support our goal of ending adult marijuana prohibition. Today we get tunes for Irie Wednesday, our celebration of that mellow vibe we find in the best of reggae, ska, calypso, and Latin music. Brought to you by Grateful Dread Public Radio, Summit, New Jersey's progressive peace station at gdreadradio.net. If you'd like to submit your song to be played on Normal Show Live, send it to us at stash@normal.org. Now, here's some great independent marijuana music for today's Daily Toker Tunes.
Hey now, pretty babies. Summit, New Jersey's Grateful Dread with you. We're checking in from our remote studio in Baltimore, Maryland, but you can find us online where we always can be found, gdreadradio.net. We look forward to seeing you there. We hope you had a most iry Thanksgiving and that you're gearing up for a fine winter holiday season. Speaking of which, it's December 1st, so we want to wish a happy Hanukkah to everybody in the audience who celebrates. We also want to send out some Get Better Beans to our friend Ganja John. Stay strong, buddy. Things are looking up and we couldn't be happier. Today's Toker tune is sheer perfection by definition. It comes from the artist known alternately as Mr. Perfect or Perfect. This man of many names was born with another name, Greg Rose. He started his career as Little Ninja, but chose his present nom de plume because of his reputation as a perfectionist in the studio. DJing was his ticket out of the Kingston ghetto and into the limelight. Perfect scored his first hit, Lock Me Up, in 2004, and followed it with Handcart by the following year. Since then, his rollicking Sing J recordings have heated up dance floors and sound systems and clubs throughout the world. Perfect Sing J is about life, love, sex, life in the streets, and of course, ganja. His performances and productions are perfectly rough and raw, hard-hitting. They definitely grab your attention. He's really worth a listen. You can find Perfect's music on iTunes and Amazon.com. You can find him also on MySpace. Or you can just sit tight, open your ears, and hear him right here on Normal Show Live. Our featured piece of Perfect Reggae comes from the 2005 Tads Records compilation, Hard Drug Rhythms. It's Ganja Spliff by Mr. Perfect.
Get him on it! Yeah, officer! No way! I ain't gonna let you take me down for this split. I'd rather to swallow this one.
Yeah, I do.
However, thank you for listening.
Boom.
Thank you.
You're on a girl on me out of court this I hear at all. The Ganja Spliff, police yard. Church meeting me near my call. Big on the slip. No coach can ask me not even pick it football. Big on. Oh, what a lovely draw of herbs. I'm smoking from the chalet. Why is it good for my nerves? Load up the coachy for you and yours. And this one is for his and hers. The doctors and the nurses, it's the best medication. Bunny three times daily for good meditation. Sip a little if you can. Boil it with a piece of rosemary or dandelion. Oh, and after all it's done for you, send your bikini them go a good school. It couldn't be true. Oh, you be kill it and you still a eat callaloo. You run up, you run me out of court this a year at all. Big and just slip, police ya all, and they pull me up and no wall. Big and just slip, chop us to say in a church meeting me near Macawall. Big and just slip, no coach ya ask me not even be kick football. Big and so we the boat, 20 people in the back. Me walk the chat on 7:30, me still there, sir. Stand up and wait till me tired. About feel like a slip, till me see a little one taxi cab. Hope you kill me, don't you kill me, we a shovel. Me shout, yeah, me drive, I go scoop on the gravel. And as we bust a car, and me hear a woman fall out. Police don't go like marijuana. And I was coming from the good herbs farmer. I cannot take a road block, driver left me out, yeah. You run up, you're going to be out of court this year at all. The ganja slip, police y'all, and pull me up and the wall. The ganja slip, chop us to send in a church, meet me near my call. The ganja slip, no coach y'all ask me not even for kick football.
I know you don't like to see me sounding down whenever I start running through the town.
Just for one little slip, you try to run me over the cliff. But before you trip and collar this, I tell you, I'd rather swallow this.
You're on a girl with me out of court this a year at all. The ganja slip, police y'all all, and I pull me up and the wall. The ganja slip, chop us to sing in that church, me near my call. The ganja slip, no coach y'all ask me not even be kick football. Oh, what a lovely jar of herbs. I'm smoking from the chalet, why yes, it's good for my nerves. Load up the coachie for you and yours. And this one is out for his and hers. The doctors and the nurses said it's the best medication. Bony three times daily for good meditation. Sip a little if you can. Boil it with a piece of rosemary or dandelion. Oh, and that's all it's done for you. Send your bikini them go a good school. It couldn't be true. Oh, you be kill it and you still a eat callaloo. You run a yard with me out of court this a year at all. The ganja slip, police yard all, and a pull me up on the wall. The ganja slip, blinking past to say in a church meeting me near my wall. The ganja slip, no coach yard ask me not even to get the
money. Yeah, officer, no way, I ain't gonna let you take me down for this flip. I'd rather to swallow this one.
Yeah, I do.
However, thank you for listening.
Boom.
Thank
you. You run up yard on me out of court this a year at all. The ganja slip, police y'all, and I pull me up on the wall. The ganja slip, chop us to say in a church meeting me near my call. The ganja slip, no coach y'all ask me not even be kick football. The ganja, oh, what a lovely draw of herbs. I'm smoking from the chalet, why is it good for my nerves? Load up
The Gucci for you and yours. And this one is for his and hers. The doctors and the nurses, it's the best medication. Bunny three times daily for good meditation. Sip a little if you can. Boil it with a piece of rosemary or dandelion. Oh. And after all it's done for you, send your bikini them go a good school. It couldn't be true. Oh, you be kill it and you still a eat callaloo. You run off your gun, me out of court, it's a year at all. We can just live, police ya all, and I pull me up and no wall. We can just live, two bosses say in a church meet me near Macawall. We can just live, no coach ya ask me not even be kick football. Me walk the chat on 7:30, me still there, Sam. Stand up and wait till me tired. About feel like a slip, till me see a link below a taxi cab. Up the hill, down the hill, give me a shuffle. Me shout, yo, me drive, I go scope on the gravel. And as we bust a car, and me hear a woman ball out. Police them don't like marijuana. And I was coming from the good herbs farmer. I cannot take a road, me like driver left me out, yeah. You run off your gun, me out of court, this a year at all. He can just slip. Police y'all and I pull me up and the wall.
You want a copy of that song for your iPod? Check out the Daily Toker Tunes at the Stash blog by surfing to stash.normal.org and choosing media and then Toker Tunes from the main menu.
Starfish Designs, makers of the original Gandalf.
I'm Radical Russ, and when I want to relax, I always have my 17-inch long original Gandalf from Starfish Designs nearby. The hand-blown borosilicate glass is strong and easy to clean, and the design is sleek and sophisticated. Starfish Designs are available from Bend, Oregon at a glass retailer near you. For locations, call 541-788-GLASS. That's 541-788-4527.
Normal Show Live reminds you to never consent to a search. If you're holding, then you consent. In most states, you will be arrested immediately, and you will go to jail. If you don't consent to a search, police may try to intimidate you by threatening to bring in drug-sniffing dogs, or try to fool you by saying things will go easier if you consent. Yeah, easier for them, sure. Stand your ground, refuse the search, and ask the officer if you're free to go. If they still detain you and eventually find your contraband, you'll be no more busted than if you had allowed the search. But by refusing the search, your attorney has a chance to win your acquittal before a judge. If you consent to the search, your attorney's hands are tied. You can find a list of Normal Legal Committee attorneys specializing in marijuana cases by visiting the Find a Lawyer link at normal.org.
It's time for Normal Show Live's Cannabis Science with Dr. Mitch Earlywine. Dr. Earlywine is a professor of psychology at the State University of New York in Albany and the author of Understanding Marijuana. Now here's your dose of Cannabis Science.
Welcome back, everyone. And Cannabis Science segment here today begins with a wish of happy Hanukkah to you, Dr. Earlywine. How are you? Did we make it in before sundown?
Indeed, no, everything's going great, and it's wet here, but otherwise, a happy first day of December, and happy Hanukkah to all the listeners.
Yeah, I know, I don't know how far out north Albany is. I know our sundown here is at like 4:30 Pacific time. Our days are getting really short here.
That's the same case here, and I hate to say it, I've got to use my special seasonal affective disorder light as well as my other antidepressants.
Yeah, we'll talk about that. I wanted to bring that up as well, but today being December 1st, I wanted to lead off with it being World AIDS Day, and this was something that kind of struck me as I got to thinking about it. I looked up some statistics for our home state here in Oregon with regard to the medical marijuana program. Of course, HIV/AIDS is a qualifying condition in all the medical marijuana states, yet out of 36,000, over 36,000 patients in Oregon, we only have 651 patients that are registered with HIV/AIDS as one of their qualifying conditions. How has medical cannabis, how can it benefit the HIV/AIDS community, and why are we having such reluctance in getting them on board with medical marijuana?
There are a couple of things that seem to be going on with this. First and foremost, one explanation has just been that folks are using it, but they're not registered. Mm-hmm. You can imagine folks who are dealing with a lot of intense medical stuff may not put getting registered at the top of their list, particularly if they have friends who are avid suppliers for them. And I really wish that they would take the time, because I think it's going to help the programs and it's going to help other patients and, you know, provide more data to show how serious this illness is, but also how much cannabis can actually help. In addition, I hate to say it, but a whole lot of folks just don't understand the potential. Marijuana is superb for battling the nausea associated with a lot of the cocktail combinations of drugs that are common to HIV, the loss of appetite associated with that, and then the weight loss that seems to go with that. So the combination of cannabis and some of the steroids that folks get, particularly when they're having trouble holding their weight on, is truly superb for making sure that you don't lose body weight, because once you've lost about a third of your body weight to this disease, it's really hard to turn that around and stay alive. And so I would love to hear more people spreading the word about that. And the third issue seems to be just one about embarrassment about going to physicians about this issue when they're already immersed in a whole lot of other potentially strange issues with HIV. And I just want to emphasize that physicians know this is out there, particularly in Oregon and California. You certainly would not be the first HIV patient to have this discussion with a doctor. And that as more and more data come out in support of this, I think this should be something that's really a frontline treatment as far as controlling some of the side effects associated with HIV treatment is concerned.
You know, sometimes when the subject of medical marijuana comes up, our opponents will cite some reefer madness that, you know, marijuana lowers your immune function, which always seemed to me counterintuitive if we're giving it to AIDS patients. What can you tell us about marijuana use and immune function?
It's unfortunate that a new study came out suggesting that this is possible, but when you look closely at the study, first of all, it's performed in rodents, and it uses a dose that would literally be 50 to 100 times what even the most avid stoner would ever go anywhere near.
Okay.
And then, sure enough, we do see some changes in immune function in those rodents. But the same thing wouldn't happen if we did that with aspirin. If you can imagine shoving 50 aspirin down a rat's throat, what a surprise, those poor rats wouldn't do so well either. When you look at actual HIV patients, human people, like the folks who go to Donald Abrams' lab, we find, no, there isn't any deficit in immune function that's detectable in any kind of meaningful way. And in part because of enhanced mood and improved appetite, there can be slight increases in immune function associated with medical cannabis use.
All right. We're speaking with Dr. Mitch Earlywine. We'll take your calls and questions here live, 971-533-7111, or you can just type them up in the chat room, and Carrie will get those over to us. The statistics on HIV/AIDS from the Centers for Disease Control are showing that a little over half of new transmissions are from male-to-male sexual contact, a little over 30% from heterosexual contact, and then the rest have some sort of combination of intravenous drug use that's involved in the spread of HIV/AIDS. What can we do as, you know, members of the cannabis community to protect ourselves from the risks of HIV/AIDS, and how much does this drug war prevent us from truly fighting against this epidemic?
Well, the saddest frontline issue seems to be the availability of needles for IV drug users. The fact that it's impossible to just walk into the local drugstore and get needles is a complete embarrassment in this country. And everybody's concerned that, oh, this is going to increase heroin use or something like that. I assure you nobody is dying to start a new heroin injection habit. These are folks who've really struggled and done the best they can and need to have this availability in order to minimize the harm associated with this bad habit. Ideally, we would also make sure that they have the opportunity to use cannabis as a substitute in order to make heroin withdrawal easier. And I feel like if that were an option, suddenly people would be more willing to go into treatment. But, of course, we have this drug war getting in the way. That said, marijuana and unsafe sex has been linked in a couple of different data sets, but not at the event level. It doesn't look like people get high and then can't put on a condom or can't negotiate that, so much as people who like to get really, really high all the time also seem to be the same people who tend to forget to use condoms, particularly with new partners. And what I recommend, and I know this sounds insane, but basically if you're concerned about being able to negotiate safe sex after using cannabis, the thing to do is practice. every time you get high, by all means, go ahead and put on a condom, even if you're by yourself.
Wow. I'm going to go through a lot of condoms, Dr. Mitch. All right. These are all great tips. And, of course, the main thing people can do to be aware is to get tested. Like I said, that stat at the beginning of the show, 1 out of 5 people living in America who have HIV don't even know it right now. So let's get you tested. We've got a live call coming in here from the 620 area code. 620, welcome to Toker Talk Radio and Normal Show Live with Dr. Mitch. What's your question for Dr. Mitch?
Oh, my question is, well, okay. I know that mangoes, they said scientifically, have a chemical in it that helps cannabis cross the blood-brain barrier. I don't know what that's called. But I wonder if there's anything, other chemicals that do that, and if they had it in like a pill form, in more of a vitamin pill form. Not, I don't really like taking pills. But
mm-hmm. Okay. Dr. Mitch, any ideas?
Generally, THC has no problem making its way across the blood-brain barrier, so it really shouldn't be a big issue for folks, particularly if you're healthy and getting sufficient fat in your diet, which is not a big issue here in the United States. If you search on Medline, actually, marijuana and mango don't even show up, don't even produce anything. And it shouldn't be a big issue. As far as, state of the gut or other things that would help cannabis be absorbed more readily, again, generally, if you're in good health, THC and the other cannabinoids really don't have a problem making its way to the appropriate receptors.
All right. Thanks you for your call, 620. We appreciate that. And we had some people in the chat room earlier were discussing marijuana edibles, using marijuana in tinctures or brownies or what have you. And just in general, I wanted to ask you, if you had, let's say an eighth of an ounce of cannabis, what is going to have a longer lasting effect, smoking it, vaporizing it, or using it in an edible?
We don't have tons of data on the vaporizer yet, but it tends to be pretty comparable to the smoking. Edibles tend to go further, in part because there's a less rapid onset, but once they kick in, your stomach and liver essentially make another compound, 11-hydroxy-THC, which crosses that blood-brain barrier even more readily and ends up making folks report higher peaks and longer duration of effects. Because it's a gradual onset, a lot of people find that a little more pleasant, a little easier to deal with. But the clincher is you can't assume that you've peaked at the same amount of time you would have peaked from, say, smoking. So it's unfortunate when I hear people say, oh, we ate a brownie, we waited half an hour, I didn't feel anything, so I ate 2 more. And then suddenly they're discombobulated and have terrible munchies, and the only things around is more brownies.
Okay. Back to the topic of seasonal affective disorder. For folks that may not know, this is a sort of a depressive disorder that comes around as we get to these shorter winter days, having to do with our exposure to light. And Mississippi Hippie has a question wanting to know, does cannabis help with that?
As it turns out, the real state-of-the-art treatment is the light exposure. And I used to make fun of this when I lived in California because I thought, oh, come on, what are you talking about? But we had plenty of light out there.
Yeah.
I moved to Albany and by October was ready to slit my own throat and went ahead and got one of these lights. And, man, within 2 weeks I was a new man. And I actually looked back at some of the journals I kept when I lived in Indiana, and I had had this for years and didn't even realize.
Wow.
And I feel like rather than looking at cannabis as a potential intervention, put out the $160, it's cheaper than suicide, and go get the Ultralux or any of those lamps, and it's like night and day. I can't even emphasize it enough.
Especially out here in the Pacific Northwest, where from about October through April, our forecast is gray with a chance of wet. They said the sun was going down today at 4:30 p.m. I'm like, how can you tell? Okay, let's get some more questions here from our chat room. Question about, and this is from Pro Liberties, I love the name. I had a question about cannabis and prostate cancer. I read somewhere a while ago that people who smoke cannabis often have lower prostate or lower PSA results. Are there any actual studies on this?
So I went ahead and searched that when I saw it in the chat room, and no, there's nothing. However, if you have a physician who's, you know, on your side with this kind of thing, the thing to do is to say, let me take one now, let me take one of the PSA exams and see if I can get this to work. And if it is in the safe zone, could I take a couple weeks off and come back and do it again? And usually, you know, a smart physician is willing to do that. In a sense, this shouldn't be an outrageous deal because cannabis doesn't look like it has a big impact on the rates of prostate cancer, but we wouldn't want to get anybody sort of lulled into a false sense of security simply because cannabis was interfering with the test.
Okay. You know, and this is something, you know, I think we ought to just say in general to our listeners out there is, you know, if you've got the right kind of relationship with your doctor, work with them and track these kind of things, and we can get more at least anecdotal reports of how cannabis works, and maybe that leads to more studies. It could only be good for us to do more scientific inquiry on this stuff. All right, let's see. Question from – oh, and before we get too far, I want to let folks know if you don't get your question answered today on the show, you can always send an email to Dr. Mitch at 420research@gmail.com. That's 420research@gmail.com. Question from Dist9EMT. My girlfriend has asthma. Would cannabis have an impact on her respiratory system, minor or major, positive or negative?
As it turns out, there are a subset of case studies suggesting that cannabis can help asthma, but it's not my first line of defense, if you will, and I think that standard asthma meds are often better. I would definitely say vaporization or edibles only because the inhalation of smoke is just not a good idea with any kind of respiratory problem.
Okay. Two more here before we close up. Bunny 747 wants to know, she says, I have epilepsy seizure disorder. Is digesting the cannabis going to give her a better or different effect than if she is to vaporize or smoke it for epilepsy?
As it turns out, the key factor for all seizures may actually be cannabidiol. So not the mode of administration, but the actual strain. And I know it's hard to identify, you know, just what is the big strain with all the CBD, but fortunately Dale has put some of that stuff together at his CBD website, and I think that would be, you know, worth checking into. But either technique should work. It's just a matter of finding a strain that's going to be most helpful for you, and that unfortunately may end up being a little bit of trial and error.
Yeah, unfortunately, we have to do the trial and error method. We have our last call coming in from 808 area code. What's your question for Dr. Mitch?
If I come up found another arch enemy in the greenhouse, grasshoppers, is there anything I can use that won't wipe out the plants or me?
That's more of a question for Danny Danko, and we'll have him on the show on tomorrow. Tomorrow we'll be reporting from the Cannabis Cup. But cultivation questions we're going to save for Danny Danko. This is more about science and health and medicine and so on. I will close up the show here with this last not really a question, but a statement of thanks for you, Dr. Mitch. Big Doug Blacksmith from our chat room wants to thank you for suggesting keeping a pain journal. He says his current doctor is taking him more seriously with regards to the back pain. They took 10 x-rays on Monday and some blood tests. Let's give that advice out to our listeners here about keeping pain journals and interfacing with their doctors and keeping track of their own conditions.
The clincher here is if you've got literally just a date book and you rate whatever your symptom is, just 0, I got nothing, to 10, oh my God, it's completely unendurable, and also chart how much cannabis you're using, it's stunning how physicians love the science. And if you lay that out, you seem much more serious. It's obvious that you understand the link between your symptoms and your use, and even the dumbest physician is bound to have to say, okay, looks like something's going on. And getting them on your side like that, there's no substitute. I gave a copy of Understanding Marijuana to my physician, and it's stunning how, you know, suddenly this topic is no longer taboo. Anytime you bring them data, you're going to increase your credibility.
That's right. Bring them data. Charts always help, too. Thank you, Dr. Mitch Earlywine. Happy Hanukkah to you and your family. And will we talk to you next week, or will there still be celebration happening?
No, I'm still going to be game, so
okay.
I wouldn't miss this even for double Hanukkah.
For double secret Hanukkah even. Okay. Well, thank you, Dr. Mitch. We'll talk to you next week.
Looking forward to it. Bye now.
It's tough talking to kids about marijuana. especially if you might be a parent who dabbled a time or two in your youth. So to help you out, get your copy of Dr. Mitch Earlywine's latest book, A Parent's Guide to Marijuana. Dr. Earlywine is an associate professor of psychology at the State University of New York at Albany and an expert on the studies concerning marijuana, its effect on health and society, and the methodology behind the statistics. He is a frequent guest here on our daily audio stash. Dr. Earlywine lays it all out without the propaganda and scare tactics that parents know won't work with teenagers. He presents a rational understanding of cannabis, what it is and what it isn't, and why kids shouldn't be using marijuana. You can order today through Amazon.com or check our links at our blog, stash.normal.org.
Are you or is someone you know a marijuana smoker? Have you or is someone in your family been arrested for a marijuana violation? You need to know the truth about pot. Normal, the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws, is the most comprehensive source of information regarding marijuana and its effects on health, as well as legal issues. Normal even offers a database of lawyers specializing in cannabis in your area. Normal, the nation's largest and most successful marijuana law reform organization, has spent decades gathering the knowledge and science on everything related to cannabis. Normal is the best resource to find out the truth about marijuana, connect with a lawyer in your area, or help find an end to prohibition. Information is available at normal.org. That's N-O-R-M-L.org. Or toll free at 888-67-NORMAL.
You want answers?
I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore.
You want answers?
You have offended my family.
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth.
And you have offended Shaolin Temple.
You can't handle the truth.
Surely you can't be serious.
I am serious, and don't call me Shirley.
Radical rant.
Welcome back, everyone. We're going to talk a little bit about the latest medical marijuana state, the 15th medical marijuana state, Arizona, which passed its Prop 203 by 50.13% of the vote. Great job. But I got this article from the Arizona Republic that cropped up onto my email box that I just had to go through here because it seems the employers in Arizona are terrified about this new law. It's a slightly different law than what we have in most of the other medical marijuana states in that it explicitly protects the workplace rights of medical marijuana patients. It says that you cannot be fired, terminated, passed up for promotions, disciplined, anything just for the result of metabolites on a drug test. Okay. If you're a medical marijuana patient. Now, if they can show that you were impaired, they can show that you were using at work. Yes, they can fire you, can do all that stuff. But if it's just a pee test and you're turning up positive for metabolites, which we all know can turn up in a marijuana user's urine for, you know, up to a week, up to a month, sometimes up to 90 days in some tests, depending on how much you're using. And you got to figure that a medical marijuana patient's probably using more than the average toker. So, you know, the use of a pee test to bust them for anything is completely unfair. So the employers, of course, are freaking out about this. They're freaking about the notion that their workplaces are going to be filled with stoned forklift drivers. This is from the Arizona Republic. Zero tolerance of drug use is the workplace norm in Arizona, but the medical marijuana law that takes effect next year will cloud what had been a clear-cut issue for workers and employers. If a supervisor suspects that using marijuana for medical reasons affects the quality of an employee's work, how should that supervisor respond? If employees who were prescribed medical marijuana are injured in an accident on the job, are they eligible for workers' compensation? What happens if a legal user of marijuana fails a company's drug test when applying for a job? All right, let's go back to that first paragraph. Zero tolerance of drug use is the workplace norm. Really? Because, you know, every workplace that I ever worked at, you had some lady that usually worked as a receptionist or the office manager who was known as the first aid lady, right? She had the kit. You could get the aspirin, the Benadryl, Tylenol, all sorts of anti-nausea stuff. You always had that every workplace I worked at. And let's not forget all the people on prescription medications who are allowed to come into the workplace. Could be antipsychotics, could be antidepressants, mood stabilizers, muscle relaxers, painkillers, pain relievers, all sorts of things. things that people come in. Oh, and let's not forget the people who go out for the two martini lunch, right? The bosses, the executives going out there, or even some places where I've worked, where going out for lunch and having a beer with the rest of the crew was okay, and you could come back to work and finish out your shift. So don't tell me there's zero tolerance for drug use in the workplace. That's not happening anywhere in America. But you want to know what the answers are, employers, to those questions you just asked? Just replace the word marijuana with Vicodin. If a supervisor suspects that using Vicodin for medical reasons affects the quality of an employee's work, how should the supervisor respond? If employees who were prescribed medical Vicodin are injured in an accident on the job, are they eligible for workers' compensation? What happens if a legal user of Vicodin fails a company's drug test when applying for a job? We seem to be able to answer those questions with all sorts of prescription medications that are out there, but the minute we make marijuana legal for medical purposes, this is a big problem. We don't know what to do. Let me go on. This is another piece from the Arizona Republic where they interview one of these construction guys, Doug Stegemoeller, president of a Phoenix construction company, worries how the new law will impact worker safety. Quote, "And if one employee would have a medical marijuana prescription but is still able to work in the workforce, how would that affect the safety of our employees and the quality of our work?" said Stegemoeller, president of E&K of Phoenix Incorporated. Because of safety concerns, E&K requires that job candidates take drug tests. The company also uses random drug testing, and workers are tested for drugs after workplace accidents. Workers disclose what kind of prescriptions they use, he added. Okay. So when those things happen and they disclose their Vicodin prescription, what do you do, Mr. Stegemoeller? Why should your treatment of medical marijuana patients be any different than your treatment of Vicodin patients? Well, I'll tell you why. Here's the problem. Employers like to discriminate against medical marijuana users. Hell, employers like to discriminate against marijuana users, period. Because they still believe the reefer madness that a person who uses cannabis is some sort of moral degenerate and physically dangerous at the workplace, even if they smoked a joint on Friday and they're coming to work on Monday. The problem with allowing medical marijuana users in the workplace is not that they're a safety risk to the other employees, but they're the proof that the alleged safety risks from marijuana users are ludicrous. I mean, really, how do you explain to Bill, who's that you gotta fire him on a Wednesday because he smoked a joint on Monday and the random pee test picked him up? How do you explain to Bill that he needs to be fired when he works alongside Ted all day, who we know is a medical marijuana patient, we know uses marijuana every evening to be able to sleep? How do you fire Bill for smoking the joint on the weekend when he knows Ted is a perfectly safe worker who smokes a joint every night for medical purposes? How do you do that, right? How do you justify the need to discriminate against the non-medical users who know the medical users are safe, effective, productive employees? That's where medical marijuana is causing the problem for these employers. It's not that they're afraid of the medical marijuana patients. It's that they're afraid that this destroys every last shred of rationale they ever put forth for doing drug testing in the first place. There is nothing about the quantity of THC metabolites in one's urine that tells you how good a worker they are, how trustworthy they are, how productive they are, or how safe they are. In fact, when we look at workplace statistics with regard to accidents, the number one thing that causes accidents in the workplace is fatigue and drowsiness. The number two thing is relation to alcohol, either being drunk or hung over from alcohol. Right? Injuries that people are suffering, emotional problems that they're suffering, all these things cause distractions and problems for safety in the workplace. So much more than whether or not someone smoked a joint on the weekend. But in our society, we've once again come up with this notion that we can magically detect, based on the chemistry in one's body, whether or not someone is morally upstanding, whether or not someone's trustworthy, whether or not someone's safe, whether or not someone's productive. It's definitely not something I think our founding fathers would have been able to wrap their minds around. I mean, we think of the I Have a Dream speech with Martin Luther King. I have a dream that someday my children will be judged by the content of their character and not the color of their skin. Well, now, Dr. King, your kids are judged on the content of their urine instead of the content of their character. It's my hope that this Arizona medical marijuana law, and there's also a case in Michigan where, and Michigan has somewhat of a similar protection for workplace rights, where the guy up at the Walmart in Michigan was fired because he turned up positive on a pee test. A legal medical marijuana patient. It's my hope that these cases in Michigan and Arizona are the first step in tearing down the drug testing regime for employment, period, in this country. There is no, all of these drug tests, all they are witch hunts for cannabis consumers. All of the other recreational drugs that you can name, coke, meth, heroin, ecstasy, LSD, mushrooms, all of them are out of your system within 2 to 3 days. The only one that stays around for any length of time is cannabis. And that's what all these drug testing industries and drug rehabs are built on. We are the grist in the drug war mill, and workplace drug testing is the key to it. We got to take it down. I'm Radical Russ. Thanks for joining us here for Hour 1. Coming up in Hour 2, Toker Talk Radio, we'll be taking your calls, 971-533-7111. And until next time, take care of each other, Tokers.
This is Normal Show Live, the voice of the marijuana nation.
You grow it, you try it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you try it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you try it, you roll it, you smoke it, and it goes down smooth.